This is Susan V. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out, and I'm delighted to be speaking with Barry Lewis Bulisar. If you don't know his name, maybe you didn't have a childhood. I don't know. But but if you don't know his name, you probably do know the movie Juno, and that's his song in the opening credits. And All I Want Is You is Barry Bulisar's hit single, I believe, Barry?
Yeah, after 30-some years. It took me 30 years to get a hit, but yeah.
you were an overnight success in 30-something years.
Right.
At any rate, Barry is the inspiration for the inaugural production of Telluride Theater. It's a play called Barry. It's written by Sasha Cuccinello, and it will be at the Sheraton Opera House Friday, December 9th, Sunday, December 11th, and Monday, December 12th. Showtime is 5:30, and it's for kids of all ages. Barry, thank you for joining me.
Oh, pleasure. Nice to chat with you.
So take us back to when you first started writing. I believe the year was 1975, and the trigger was a scolding teacher.
Yes, it was. I was actually going to college at the University of Maryland. I live on the East Coast in the state of Maryland. And I was at college, and a teacher saw me with my guitar, asked me to come and visit her school and do a presentation. She actually had to talk me into doing it because I'd never performed before, never gotten on stage before. But I had a great time at this little school, and after the program, the very first time I was ever on stage, I overheard a teacher yelling at her kids. Except the things that she was saying just jumped out at me as wonderful material. Things like, wipe those grins off your faces. You're acting just like children. Who gave you permission to laugh? This is an assembly program. You're not here to have a good time. And I quickly copied down everything she said, and I went home, wrote it into a song. But the surprising thing was, because I was in college planning to be a teacher, teachers and schools found out about the song that I had written and started calling me up. And I often tell the story when I'm doing my concerts and my programs in the schools now. They, you know, get these calls. Is this Barry Lewis Bulisar? Yes. Is it true that you wrote a song about a mean teacher? And sheepishly, I'd say, yes, that's me. Well, I'm a teacher, and I want to know. Can you come to my school and sing that song? And that really was the genesis of my career. I never, ever expected I would make a living for 35, now 36 years, singing in the schools, traveling around the country, visiting libraries, museums, art centers, recording albums, writing books, and, of course, ultimately with the song, you know, in the movie Juno. All of that, none of that was planned. All of that just sort of fell into place as I proceeded to just do my thing.
Okay, thank you for that. Excuse me. Was there anything in your childhood that would have pointed to a career as a young people's entertainer? I mean, do you come from a large family where you had to shout to get heard? Anything like that?
Yeah, not really, but I was the oldest in my family. I was the oldest child, and I think, and actually there's about 8 or 9 years between me and my youngest siblings, and so I had a little bit of what they say in the literary world, critical distance and critical perspective. I could see the foils and follies of my family and all the sort of the odd things that would go on, the interactions with parents and kids and teachers, but I was old enough that I didn't have to, that I could see it and recognize it and write about it, but not in a position that I had the authority to do discipline or anything else. So I actually got to celebrate those experiences that my early songs were mostly written about my younger brothers, my younger sister, people that were in my family.
Okay. And then what happened after you yourself pressed 1,000 vinyl copies of I Eat Kids and other songs for rebellious children? I think that
was I dragged those albums, and they were albums. They were vinyl record albums back in the 70s, and I dragged them upstairs into this little garret apartment where I lived at the time and looked at that pile and said, I'm never going to get rid of these albums. I'm going to have these the rest of my life. And actually, I commented that remembered what Thoreau had said when he was forced to buy back his initial printing of his first book. He wrote in his journal that day that he was happy to announce that he had a library of over 1,000 volumes, 950 of which he had written himself. That's kind of what I felt like. I had the biggest record collection ever, but all one album. And that record album, I Eat Kids and Other Songs for Rebellious Children, is still around. I mean, it's pretty old. It sort of had a second life now with my song In Juneau. But it was recorded in 1975. No budget. I just went into a recording studio. Again, had never been in a studio before. Sat down in front of a microphone. One take. Boom, 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 boom. Knocked out all the songs. And again, I was never expecting to do this as a career. This was just something that I was having fun at. And truthfully, when I started earning a living singing in the schools and the libraries and getting paid, it felt very weird for me. This was the mid-70s. We'd just gone through the 60s. And my sense was, this is art. And I wasn't supposed to make money on art. I was supposed to just be an artist and create. And so my attitude at the time was just to take whatever I made from those concerts and just roll it back in and make an album. And, of course, the cost of making the album, pressing the vinyl and getting a cover and getting it all produced was where the cost was, not the studio time for me. Mm-hmm. And then I basically, at the time, sold it pretty much for cost. Again, never expecting to make money or to even to break even. But after about a year, I had sold out of all 1,000 copies, and I had written more songs. So what I did is I turned around and I did a second album. And, of course, now as a 57-year-old, I go back and I think, well, that's just like business 101. You take the profits from your first thing and you plow it into the second one. But that was not my intent at all. I was really trying to just get rid of that money. Like, it wasn't mine. It didn't belong to me, and I wanted to just pass it on into the next creative project. And to some degree, I still do that. I mean, pardon the dog barking. But most of what I do with my music and my books, each project sort of fuels the next project. If they're successful and if they make money, they go ahead and end up financing the next project, whether it's a book or a CD or whatever.
Okay. Before Juneau, was there a critical turning point in your career, or did it simply evolve organically as you were describing?
Well, yeah, both. I mean, it did evolve organically and ironically, especially ironically. I mean, I had all kinds of interesting little touchstones that I kind of thought of as like, oh, this is an interesting little place to be. You know, I played at the Kennedy Center. I did a concert at the White House. I performed at the Smithsonian Museum. I traveled all over the country from Alaska to Washington, D.C. But I also had other interesting little touchstones. I had in the height of the early 1990s when there was a real movement towards censorship and banning of books and CDs, I had actually a First Amendment challenge with a school district who objected to some of the songs in one of my earlier albums. Actually, you know, it was a big, long project with the ACLU got involved, and I mean, it was a real interesting experience for me that in a way left me without work for a couple years, and so I started touring in Europe as a result. And then, ironically, I was offered a TV show. I was talking on some television show about the experiences of having my work challenged, and got a phone call from somebody who said, well, the CEO of the TV station has kids in the school that you visited last year, and they'd really like you to come in and talk about doing a TV show. So, you know, one door opens, you know, one door closes, another door opens. There have been sort of peaks and valleys. It's definitely all unexpected, never expected any of that.
Okay. Now let's talk about the Juneau moment. How exactly did it come about? Were you really going to trash at one point the song All I Want Is You?
Well, I wasn't going to trash the song, but I wasn't necessarily going to include it. I recorded my second album in 1977, and I had about 15, 16 songs, and I had put like 19 songs on my first album. I think every time I've done an album, I've said, oh, this is the last album I'm ever going to do. Whatever songs I have, I got to put on there. But I felt like that second album didn't have quite enough songs, and I looked around at what I called or considered to be my B material, my songs that were just not maybe as good as all the other songs. And here is a song, All I Want Is You. If I was a flower growing wild and free, all I want is you to be my sweet honeybee. And I said, well, that would be kind of an interesting song to put on. It's got a kind of kid-like flavor. So I threw it on the album, and it was sort of a last-minute decision. And I have to say, most of the songs that I write and sing for kids tend to be funny, satirical. Some are even a little bit edgy. And that song isn't. That is such a very sweet, sweet song. Although I have to say, when I recorded it on my album back in 1977, it was the last song on side one, I think. And when a vinyl record would end, you know, the needle goes around and around, and there was like a minute of silence, and then this cranky old voice comes on and says, "If you were a candle, I'd be the wick. If you were a doctor, I'd be sick." And it sort of makes fun of my own song. I did a sort of self-mocking of my own imagery.
Right.
And I always remember a friend of mine in New York was listening to the album, and she said, "Boy, that's such a sweet song, but it doesn't sound like all your others." And then that came on. She says, "Oh, I get it now, yeah." But actually, truthfully, on every album, I've always put one or two what I call kid-like love songs. A song, "Me and You," was on my first album.
Right.
A song with a giggle and a hug and a tickle and a kiss was on my third album. So there's been a sort of tradition of that. And it's always surprising when people discover me and they go, "Oh, you know, he really has written other kinds of songs, not just the song about the brothers and the sister and the teachers and the parents." But how that song was discovered was an interesting one too. You had asked about that. And again, very ironic, the director of the movie, Juno, was searching iTunes for another song with a different title. And he typed in the words to my song actually by accident and stumbled on my song and gave it a listen and then bought it and then had his staff people call me and say, you know, "Jason Reitman, the director of Juno, new movie called Juno, heard your song, would like to put it in the movie." And I had no idea how they were going to use it. I had no idea it was going to be in the beginning. It was going to open the film. As a matter of fact, I tell the story that I actually was starting to have nightmares once I found out what the movie was about. And I actually emailed Jason, the director, and he said, "Okay, I know how you're going to use this. The main character is going to be in bed, and my song is going to be, you know, on the clock radio, and it's going to wake her up, and she's going to reach over and shut it off and say, 'Oh, I hate that song.'" And he said, no, "You're going to like how we use it." And I discovered how they used it when I was sitting in the theater for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which
okay.
was a cool experience.
So all this is backstory to the main event, at least the main event in Telluride, which is Sasha Cuccinello's play, Telluride Theater's first play, named eponymously Barry. So I want a little bit of that story. Why did you take Telluride Theater's executive director Colin Sullivan's call in the first place, and why in the world did you agree to let a playwright you had never met wrap words around your music and put on a show?
Well, I think as a songwriter, I mean, I certainly feel ownership with my songs, and I've created them the way that I've created them. But the experience of having songs in movies, and there's a couple other films, I think, that are going to be coming out with other songs of mine in it, and I've had my songs used in animated films and various other things, and it's sort of letting it go a little bit. It's sort of letting someone else's vision take over. And I think probably the most incredible thing, having a song in Juno was great, and it's the song has been in commercials all over the world, and people are singing it in their dorm rooms, and all of that is really great. But the thing that has really been amazing is about 2 years ago, a fan who had my albums growing up put together a tribute album of my songs. And what he did is he got together with about 40 or 50 musicians from all over the world, actually, and they did covers of my songs. And in doing that, they reinvented my songs. They turned some of my folky songs into punk rock songs or bluegrass songs. I mean, they just did every conceivable musical genre. As a matter of fact, somebody took what was then my signature song, "Don't Put Your Finger Up Your Nose, Because Your Nose Knows It's Not the Place It Goes," and they did it as a klezmer song sung entirely in Yiddish, which is just so funny. And I think having that experience, seeing what other people could do with reinventing my work and reimagining it and making it theirs, made me very receptive to the idea of hey, that'd be fun. Let's see what you can come up with.
Well, Sasha is uniquely talented, and I think you will be very pleased. Is there any chance in the world you're going to make it here to see?
I don't think I'm going to be making it for this production. They were talking to me at some point about trying to piggyback that onto maybe having a school or a library bring me in to do a concert, and then
right.
I could do something at the theater. And I think time just got away from both of us. We both kind of looked up and said, "Oh, that's like in 2 weeks," and so we never really kind of were able to do that. I know she said that she's going to send me some video footage of what they do, which is not the same. I mean, I've seen enough plays on you know that have been videoed, and it's not the same. But it would be nice to see it.
Well, at least you'll have an idea.
Yeah.
And so thank you very, very much, Barry, for joining me. This has been Susan V. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out, with the one and only Barry Lewis Pulisar. Sasha Cuccinello and Telluride Theater are putting on a play named for him, Barry. They're the first play of Telluride Theater ever in its new incarnation as Telluride Theater, a merger of The Rep and The Squid Show. And that play is happening at the Sheridan Opera House, and it's happening this coming weekend, and that is beginning on, let me see, on Friday, December 9th, continuing Sunday and Monday. Show times are 5:30. Barry, thanks once again for your time. It's been
my pleasure. It was enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you.